first question, could you introduce yourself and tell us what you do now?
Sure. My name is James Rodehaver, and I'm the chief of OHCHR's Myanmar team, which is located in Bangkok. And my team essentially is a remote office that focuses on the human rights situation in Myanmar. We don't have access to the country, and so we have to utilize remote monitoring methodologies and so forth to do our work.
Well, that sounds very familiar to the situation in Syria and your previous role. And so could you tell us what you were doing before this position with OHCHR?
Yes, I was the coordinator of the Commission of Inquiry on Syria from 2014 until the beginning of 2020.
And can we start just from the very beginning? Could you tell us a little bit more about how the Commission of Inquiry was established and what events led to that decision?
Certainly, if my memory still works. Yeah, the Commission of Inquiry is not something that I started with. It began in November of 2011 after a resolution was passed by the Human Rights Council in late August 2011. Essentially, the member states comprising the Human Rights Council passed a resolution that called for the creation of a Commission of Inquiry that would deliver a report within a six-month period. And it was given a mandate to investigate all human rights violations being committed in the context of the Syrian crisis or armed conflict, and to verify and document those violations, and wherever possible to identify perpetrators so that it could support accountability processes. And over time, that commission has become the longest running fact-finding mechanism of its type in the history of the United Nations.
Are there specific moments that stand out to you during your time at the commission?
Unfortunately, it's basically looking at just the way in which the conflict progressed, and just each serious, catastrophic, violation after another. Every one of those critical findings or those emblematic cases that we had to report on, each one carried a weight and a gravity that just seemed to compound and to snowball after a while in terms of its the weight it left on your conscience and on your soul. I mean, whether it be, the way in which Aleppo fell, or whether it be the different instances in which, chemical weapons were utilized against, civilians. There were a lot of moments where it just seemed that, the world had gone mad and international norms no longer had any weight or applicability. And that's trying to give those standards meaning and to make them real and to breathe life and ensure that they reflected the flesh and blood of people who needed them to apply. That in the end just seemed to get, it became a less and a less tangible feeling. And that was a very difficult thing to deal with from an intellectual and emotional standpoint.
When you see a trial like the one that's taking place in Koblenz, does that give you any hope?
It doesn't give me necessarily hope because it's it's one case out of tens of thousands, if not more. But what it does do is it gives you a certain sense of satisfaction, is you realize that yes, justice is a very long road to hike, but a certain waypoint, some people will see the end of that road, or at least see the beginning of the end of that road. And so I'm just grateful that people are still walking the road towards accountability. It's critical and it needs to continue. And so it does. It gives you a certain sense of satisfaction.
How do you think that trial is resonating among Syrians? Do you have a sense of that?
I don't have a sense of it. I imagine that they feel in some ways the same way. I'm sure that it hasn't brought peace to many, but I'm sure it's given at least some glimmer of satisfaction to a few. And if that emboldens people to still tell their stories and to share their experiences, especially to prosecutors who are willing to take those cases forward, then it's certainly a cause for hope, even if it, you know, this same experience needs to be repeated tens of thousands of times over.
And is your expectation that we will see more of these kinds of cases?
I think so. I think that in the end, the model that has been established on Syria is being looked at by all of these various crises in the world, that unfortunately Syria is has set the mold in the international political arena now, that, you know, impunity prevails. And it seems to be the norm in far too many situations in the world now. And so universal jurisdiction is one of the only, you know, hopeful ways forward. And so I'm hopeful that the Syrian model will continue to be utilized and looked at to make progress in other areas, at least to make it much more difficult for individuals. Even if impunity prevails within the country where the abuses and violations and crimes happen, at least people will have to think twice before they leave those states.
And the fact that this criminal process and potentially others are taking place very far away from where the crimes were committed, what does that mean for the justice process, if anything, from your perspective?
The road to Damascus has to be built. And so I guess this is the first paving stone in that long road. I guess in some ways, since, you know, such a large portion of the Syrian population is outside of the country, I guess it just reflects the fact, you know, that justice is reflecting the reality for such a massive number of Syria's people. That justice is outside the country, just as the people, so many of the people, are outside the country. But for that road to lead back to the country and for people to see justice in Syria, it'll take a situation and a circumstance and a change in circumstances that, you know, we can't foresee now, but we have to keep building towards for the future.
I want to just end by asking you, James, I mean, you mentioned you working at the Commission of Inquiry, it really, really, it drained you, and now you're working on another very difficult situation. What keeps you going? What keeps you motivated to continue this type of work?
The victims. You said it best earlier, that you take hope from the victims. I take comfort from the victims, that every time a victim is willing to share their story and they're willing to trust either, you know, my team or me with their data, their information, their story, their truth, trying to ensure that information is preserved and is useful for the future. That's really, you know, the only contribution I feel I can make. You know, I mentioned earlier methodology. Methodology, you know, is also something that I take comfort in, because in the end it's following that methodology and trying to ensure that that information is collected and preserved in a proper manner, and that it's watertight, that it can withstand scrutiny. That is what is going to make sure that these people eventually find justice, and that their stories are not just dismissed as fake or phony, and that there is a record that can be used by prosecutors in future, whenever the status quo does change and whenever there is a road that leads either to Damascus or to Yangon or Naypyidaw or wherever justice needs to be delivered. And so if I can play any part in that process, even if it's just the very minor thing of establishing the basic facts that the experts can then use to take forward, then that keeps me motivated. That gives me a sense of purpose, and it reminds me that there is virtue in working on human rights and on these standards. It is for those victims, and to try to make their road to justice easier, even if too far in the future. But whenever they get that exit ramp, whenever they find their off ramp or their way station in Koblenz or any other process, then if we have helped assist that in any way, then I feel that'll keep me going.